This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. 10 Republican presidential contenders took the stage in South Carolina for another debate last night. The Democratic contenders will debate on Sunday. With just 2 weeks to the Iowa caucuses, the race for the White House is in full force. GOP frontrunners Donald Trump and Ted Cruz exchanged jabs about their conservatism last night. But the fighting is not limited to the GOP. President Obama noted the depth of the political divide in his final State of the Union address on Tuesday.
It's one of the few regrets of my presidency that the rancor and suspicion between the parties has gotten worse instead of better.
Political junkie Ken Rudin joins me, as he often does on Fridays, to talk about that and more. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's go back to those debates last night, Republican presidential hopefuls. There are actually 11 still in the race. 10 of them took the stage in one form or another last night. Any clear winners, do you think, or what's the world saying about that debate?
I'm not sure about winners. I would say that Ben Carson may have been the big loser because I think his numbers have been plummeting in recent weeks, and I thought he gave not much of an encouraging performance in his debate last night. But as far as winners, clearly the attention was on, as you say, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. They are running, well, Cruz has a lead in Iowa, Trump right behind him. And, of course, that's going to be the first contest on February 1st, so everybody's watching them. And, of course, we know that with Donald Trump hitting Ted Cruz on the birther issue, because Ted Cruz was born in Canada to one of his parents was an American. So Trump is trying to raise constitutional questions about whether Cruz is eligible for the presidency, and that got the biggest that was the biggest fracas of the night. But otherwise, it's just it's a battle between so many candidates, Rubio and Cruz over immigration, Rubio and Christie over guns and Planned Parenthood. It's clear that these Republicans don't like each other that much.
Well, Ted Cruz tried to make an issue of Donald Trump's birthplace, it being New York City. Let's listen to what he had to say.
There are many, many wonderful, wonderful working men and women in the state of New York. But everyone understands that the values in New York City are socially liberal or pro-abortion or pro-gay marriage, focus around money and the media. And I guess I can frame it another way. Not a lot of conservatives come out of Manhattan.
But Donald Trump went straight to 9/11 and the rebuilding after the 9/11 attacks.
And we rebuilt downtown Manhattan, and everybody in the world watched, and everybody in the world loved New York and loved New Yorkers. And I have to tell you, that was a very insulting statement that Ted made.
Ken, I guess in general, is there any fallout from this debate? Do we take this voters in Iowa and then New Hampshire take any of this into account?
Well, first of all, when Ted Cruz talked about Donald Trump having New York values, I think he was kind of talking about the fact that he was married 3 times and he's had liberal positions in the past. And I think criticizing anybody with New York values is not going to go over poorly with voters in Iowa and South Carolina. But, you know, everybody tried to make a difference. There's still one more debate before Iowa that's coming up on January 28th. Jeb Bush obviously was the only one who said, look, barring Muslims is not the way to go. It's not the way to enhance our position around the world. But he seemed to be on the minority of that. There's just a lot of skirmishing, and everybody's trying to make a difference and get voters in there, you know, get voters to pay attention. Voters in those two states, Iowa and New Hampshire, are paying attention. But right now, the battles among these subsets, the establishment battles between among Christie and Bush and Rubio and the conservative battles or the outsiders with Cruz and Trump, that's really taken over the whole tenor of the campaign.
There really are only 2 weeks left before the first real test. Are you surprised that we still have 11 candidates standing? And is that a record for this late in the primary season?
Well, yes, I guess so. At 12, if you include the former governor of Virginia, who's running, you know, there's another guy who's running as well, who's never been in any of the debates. But yes, there are a lot, and yes, somehow I think because there are super PACs that keep these candidates more viable than they should be. But I kind of suspect that take a look at Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee, the last two winners of the Iowa caucuses. They're mired in low single digits. If they do really poorly on February 1st in Iowa, they're probably gone. If some of the establishment candidates don't break out of the pack after New Hampshire, and then they have to go into the South where they're not going to likely to win either. They're going to be gone, too. So, yes, there are a lot going into the first contest, but I suspect that Iowa and New Hampshire will whittle them down considerably.
Well, I wonder if you think, again, with this many candidates going in, we've got clear front runners that the media has focused most of their attention on, in this case, at this moment, Cruz and Trump. But Trump's been at the lead of the pack for the whole race up to now. Is there anything about these what happens in these first two contests that could really overturn the equation, or does it just winnow the also-rans and give more strength to the top four or five?
Well, if you look at history, sometimes they do. Sometimes, like Gary Hart was so marred in the back of the pack, but because he finished second in Iowa in 1984, that zoomed him into victory in New Hampshire over Walter Mondale a few weeks later. So sometimes a good showing in Iowa can be reflected in New Hampshire. Pat Buchanan finished a strong second in Iowa, then won New Hampshire. So those things that can happen. But there are different electorates. You know, New Hampshire, one independents can vote. It is considered a more moderate brand of Republican voters in New Hampshire, where Iowa has the largest segment of evangelical supporters in the country. So there are two different electorates, and it's very possible you get two completely different winners.
Let's talk about the State of the Union address earlier this week. Do you think that'll have much of an effect on the presidential race?
Well, certainly Barack Obama tried to make it the case. One, of course, by talking about how the economy, the State of the Union is strong, how there are more jobs created, how the unemployment rate has been cut in half, things like that. He's tried to make the case for a Democratic victory. And, of course, when he takes on Donald Trump, as he did when talking about you just can't attack Muslims, it was obviously trying to influence the Republican race as well. But not all Democrats can run on the Obama record. You know, Bernie Sanders and perhaps even Elizabeth Warren can make the case that the rich have been getting richer, the poor have been getting poorer in the past 7 years. Income inequality is still a big issue. And so while President Obama will make the case for the Democrats to run on, not every Democrat is satisfied with what the last 7 years brought.
You know, he also took an indirect swipe at Donald Trump, I think, in particular, but some of the Republican rhetoric, in general, when he talked about the threat of terrorism. Let's listen.
Over-the-top claims that this is World War III just play into their hands. Masses of fighters on the back of pickup trucks, twisted souls plotting in apartments or garages, they pose an enormous danger to civilians. They have to be stopped. But they do not threaten our national existence. That is the story ISIL wants to tell. That's the kind of propaganda they use to recruit.
It's interesting because the president stressed that in his speech. He also talked about the way we treat and talk about Muslims in this country. The threat of ISIL and what we should do in Syria was a big topic in the previous debate. It barely came up, going back now, Ken, to the Republican debate last night. Is that becoming less an important issue? Is it a difficult issue now for the Republicans, or it just wasn't top of mind last night?
Well, no, I think it has not become a difficult position for Republicans at all, because, yes, the president will say we're making great strides against ISIS, or ISIL, as he calls the group. And, of course, his reference to World War III was a slap at Chris Christie. But, again, if you look at polls say that the American people are still not confident of the president's ability to deal with the Islamic State and the war on terror. Obviously, what happened in San Bernardino led to even more people buying guns, even though the president likes to talk about how important it is to reduce the number of guns in this country. So while the president will talk about his record and will talk about foreign policy and gun policy, that's really falling on deaf ears on the Republican side. And I think the Republicans are not backing down from their views at all about, you know, if you ask them what the State of the Union is, they'll say both on the domestic front and the foreign front, it's not so good.
Let's look ahead to the Democratic debate this Sunday evening. I think it's up against the Simpsons.
You can see it. It's at 4 a.m. on the Glockenspiel channel. And look, it's also the night before the Dr. King holiday. So the Democrats, the Democratic National Committee, the establishment, to its credit, with quotes around the word credit, are doing everything can for people not to be able to watch it. But the point is, while ostensibly this is done to help Hillary Clinton gain a foothold for the nomination, The numbers are really, really changing. Her big lead in Iowa is shrinking as far as most polls can tell. And Bernie Sanders still holds a lead in New Hampshire. So it'll be, you know, again, we keep talking about her as the anointed one, about the, you know, the all but certain Democratic nominee. But boy, if she loses Iowa and New Hampshire, which is certainly possible, we still have weeks to go, and it's certainly possible, then the inevitability question comes all over again, and the Democrats find themselves in the same quandary as the Republicans do.
North Carolina primary is 2 months from today. Any predictions about the presidential primary, how it'll shape up? But again, how important? North Carolina, the primary battles previously had not been a terribly important factor. A lot had been decided by then. It still may be an open question 2 months from now, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I mean, usually in the times when North Carolina's had its primary in May, it's all but over by then. When it's in March, it can be consequential. On March 1st is Super Tuesday, when there are 13 states, many of them in the South voting. I think the people who come out of there will look at North Carolina then as a big showdown. And, you know, having it early in March, that's good news for North Carolina and its influence.
All right, Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a UNC Chapel Hill professor documents the story of the Wilmington 10 in a new book. We'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.